Oh, hi. I'm Kaylee Moore.
And I'm Paul Jarvis.
And we have helped over 2,300 freelancers in our creative class learn clear and actionable steps to build a long-lasting freelance career they both love and enjoy.
And this is the Creative Class Podcast, a podcast for freelancers by freelancers. Hey, that's us.
Yay!
Hooray.
Hey, let's start the show.
The Creative Class Podcast is sponsored by our friends at Monday.com.
Monday.com is a team management tool that's perfect for freelancers who work together to get projects launched.
You can sign up for a free trial today at monday.com/creativeclass. And Creative Class is all one word, no dashes or spaces. You'll also receive 25% off any paid plan once the trial has expired.
So, Paul, I want to talk a little bit about working with enterprise clients, because that's kind of the goal, right, with freelancing. You want to get those really big name clients who are the folks that when you throw their name out, when you're talking to somebody, you're trying to explain what it is that you do, that people are like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that company before. So My first question is, first, let's kind of get on the same page about enterprise clients and what they are, just so that the listeners, too, know what it is that we're talking about.
Sure. So I think that there actually might be a few ways to think about enterprise clients. I think the easiest way is like Fortune 500 companies. That seems right. That seems like an enterprise client. I think there's also a different, that's not really enterprise, but like a type of client where when you and I just made me think of it when you introduced this episode. If you say the name of a client, even if they're not enterprise, but people are like, oh, I know who that company is, or I know who that person is, then their name has weight. They're known in that industry or possibly in related industries.
Right.
Do you want to include those, or do you want to talk about that type of client separate from enterprise? Or do you want to just say like, that's kind of lumped when we're talking about finding enterprise clients, working with them?
Yeah, let's kind of lump them together. I think that that's going to be the easiest way to tackle this.
Yeah, because I think they both kind of relate to this building authority and credibility with the people or the businesses that you work with.
Right. So tell me about your experience working with enterprise clients. Like, throw out some names. Let's get the ball rolling. Like, impress us here, Paul.
Yeah. So it's funny because like, if you look at my bio on my website or even on like the Creative Class, I'm going to pull up the Creative Class website for a sec, because I'm sure we both have enterprise client names listed on there.
And again, like, those are the folks that you put in your bio, because people are like, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Yep. For me, it's always Microsoft, Mercedes-Benz, Warner Music, and then Marie Forleo and Danielle Laporte, who they're not Fortune 500 businesses, but they have ridiculously successful businesses. Pretty much everybody knows who Marie Forleo and Danielle Laporte are. So to me, those are like the top clients, not in terms of like, obviously like working with them, but they're the top clients in terms of like, if I say those people's names, like if I'm looking for work or if I'm like making a sales page for a course that you and I teach called Creative Class, creativeclass.co, then those are always the names that I kind of come back to. There's a few others that I don't really mention that I probably should, but it doesn't really make sense. Because like, I'm in Canada, but like I did the website for the Highline in New York, which I think is a big deal there. But like, it's not a big deal on Vancouver Island in Canada, right?
Know your audience.
Yeah. So I think that that's the first thing that I think makes sense, is I would probably add different names, or I would put different names on a website or a proposal or something. And I even name drop these names like when I'm writing up like a statement of work or like an onboarding document. I'm going to add testimonials from like Danielle and like Mercedes-Benz and stuff in every aspect of what I do, because I want people to see like, okay, well, if those people trusted Paul to do work for them, maybe I can trust Paul to do work for me. And it would change too. Like if I was pitching another car company, I would use like BMW as well, even though I don't really say BMW, because I did a lot less work for Beamer than I did for Merck. And I like cars. I like that I got to work. But it was like the nerdiest stuff that I got to do for them. One was like a CRM management system, and one was like an internal intranet design. Like, I wasn't making fancy sites for their M series or their AMG series cars. It was like internal corporate boring interface
design. That's so funny. That's so funny, because that is the exact same scenario for me, but with AT&T. Like, you hear AT&T and you're like, wow, cool. Like, she was writing copy probably to sell their stuff. No, I was working on like an Internet of Things project that was very hyper-specific to this one small project.
Yeah.
But again, like nobody needs to know that. They just need to know that you were hired by these brands, which is true.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the type of work was. It's just that they thought that you were good enough to work with you.
You know what I did for Microsoft?
Hmm.
I did 10 drawings of icons for their Photoshop competitor, which I don't remember what it's even called because I think it died faster than it was released. Like I did icon design for one of their interfaces for an app that went nowhere. But still,
isn't
like
that funny though. That's how it is, though.
Yeah,
you were still hired. That's all that matters.
I totally was. I mean, Danielle, I was like her creative director on contract for 12 years. So like some of the people I did a lot of work for, but some of them it was just like a little bit of work for something that nobody outside of their business ever saw.
Yeah.
But still. It makes sense to use those names.
It does. And I can think of another copywriter who did some social media help for a local division of GE.
Yeah.
And again, like I worked for GE. Like that's a perfect opportunity to showcase a big name brand of an enterprise level client. And again, like the details aren't important. It's just that you worked with them.
So I want to jump around a bit because I think this is like, I'm sure I can hear people thinking right now. Mm-hmm. How, because you're a one-person business, I'm a one-person business, we're freelance people, how did you get a Fortune 500 client like AT&T to work with you, who you work from home? I work from home.
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen, Kaylee?
I know. Yeah, it's all referrals. Most of my work is referral-based. And so I talked about this last season. You and I both discussed it kind of at length, mm-hmm. that my best projects and the biggest name clients that I work with are always because I've been introduced by somebody else. Because honestly, I don't know how I would land those types of projects if I was just calling or prospecting or something like that.
Hello, AT&T.
Yes, please hire me now. It just wouldn't work that way. That's not realistic, I don't feel like. At least not for me. I'm not good at selling myself. So if somebody else can sell me, that's great. So yeah, it's always referrals for me. What about you?
Okay, well, I want to dig into that a little bit more and then I can answer the question because my answer is pretty much the same, but I want to dig into this a bit because I know listeners are probably thinking like, so how did it work to get to a place where somebody told somebody at AT&T to hire you? I'm going to pull the onion back another layer here.
So in this instance, it was a website copywriting project, which I don't even really do that type of work anymore, but at the time I was. And a past client of mine was happy with the work that I did. They had heard that somebody working at AT&T was looking for a copywriter to help with a very specific type of project. It was the same type of work. And they were happy with the results that I produced. It was just like a green light automatically. You should talk to this person.
Yeah. And I think like that's pretty much how it's worked for me, for the majority of everybody that I've worked with, especially in the beginning, was it was referrals. And I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding that just because it's a big business or a known business or a massive business, that word of mouth doesn't work for some reason. And it totally does. Mm-hmm. Like the only reason I got hired by Mercedes-Benz is because I knew another designer who had done work for them and he was just too busy. Mm-hmm. So he was like, sorry, guys, I can't do the project. Talk to Paul. He'll do it for you. And yep. It's like, I wouldn't have even known who to contact at Benz or Merck. I think it's Americans who say Benz and I think it's UK people or British people that say Merck. But I watched too many British shows that talk about cars. So all of my car language is British, even though I'm not actually British.
Yeah, I'd never heard of Merck before. It's new to me.
It's just watch.
I'm learning so much.
So watch more Top Gear or watch more, what's it called, The Grand Tour, which is a good show, even if you're not into cars. It's three ridiculous old British men doing ridiculous things like blowing up cars, driving tanks, racing cars against planes.
Oh.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Totally non sequitur. Back to enterprise.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the pros and cons of working with these types of clients. So I'll let you start because I kind of have my own list of stuff that I have learned from working with them, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
So I think the biggest pro is you have a recognizable name in your quiver for your portfolio, for any time you're pitching, anytime you're writing a bio or a byline for yourself, anytime you're mentioned anywhere, people like even in, hold on, let me just pull this up. I do too much of this. Like I should have these things. Like I'm looking at the bio that my publisher wrote for me for the book that comes out next year. And like the first sentence is, as a corporate tech designer and internet consultant, Paul Jarvis spent years working with professional athletes like Warren Sapp, Steve Nash, Shaquille O'Neal. For some reason, they feel that like pro athletes relate to this business book that I wrote for them. And with large companies like Yahoo, Microsoft, Mercedes-Benz, and Warner Music.
There we go.
And then he migrated to working with online entrepreneurs like Marie Forleo, Danielle Laporte, and Chris Carr. So like my bio that the publisher, I gave them probably like 10 pages. Like they asked me that there's like a 10 page questionnaire to get to writing this like three sentence bio, which they know how to do a lot better than I do because this is what they do for work. And every single sentence is a name drop in my bio for that book.
I guess that's how it's supposed to be, though. Otherwise, it's like, who is this guy? Why should I read his book?
Like, it gives credibility. Like, right beside the picture of me covered in tattoos. Like, otherwise, they would think it's like some totally different book. So I think that's the biggest pro, is having that name that you can then use pretty much forever. I probably did work for Mercedes like 2002 or 3, like a long time ago. Still, I use that name.
It's like, still working.
That was like a 6-month project. Like that was a huge project too. So that's probably the biggest pro. The biggest con for that is the red tape of dealing with a big business. So getting paid by a Fortune 500 company is not like getting paid by an online entrepreneur who has like a staff of 2 or 3 and they know how to run a super fast, efficient, lean business. And like, if somebody invoices me, I paid them within 5 minutes. It's like a personal game I have with myself, where if I'm hired any freelancer and they send me an invoice, I like, that's the first thing I do is click pay, because I feel like that's the most important thing. Like when I was doing freelance stuff, I like to get paid quickly. With enterprise clients, they have to send it to finance. Finance is where invoices go to die.
It's
basically
true.
And it's always like net 30 or net 60. And then so in the beginning, that's what I did. It was just like, I took on whatever payment terms they would set, because I'm like, they're a big company. I'm a one person business. But then I was like, oh, if I have net zero for my smaller size clients, I have net zero for my bigger clients. One time I got, I can't remember who it was, but it was a like massive company with offices all over the place. I got them to pay me $500 every day for like a week or 6 days to pay my invoice out of petty cash so that I would get paid right away instead of like having to send it to payroll and then like net 30 or net 60 or net 120. So I got them to pay with the corporate, with like the petty cash credit card on like my PayPal pay me pay or like my PayPal page, just so I could get paid faster. And I was like, let's figure this out. Like, we're smart people.
Yeah.
We can, or one of us is smart and I'm the other one. We can figure out how to get me the money faster to meet my terms of payment. And they're like, sure, let's figure this out. This episode is brought to you by the fine folks at Monday.com. Their software is a central platform for teams to manage every detail of their work, from road mapping to tasks to sharing design or writing assets. Monday.com also integrates with major tools like Slack, Gmail, and Zapier.
They've currently got over 22,000 paying teams, from freelancers to bigger companies like WeWork, Uber, Wix, and even Adidas. Plan out your next client or collab on projects with other freelancers using their visual boards to map out deadlines, share assets for feedback, and plan your workload for each project. You can even use it to track leads for potential projects or follow-ups after a project is complete. You can be more productive because you don't have to train your clients to use their software.
Try it out today for free at monday.com/creativeclass, and creative class is all one word. You'll also receive 25% off any paid plan once the trial expires.
Speaking of money, I think that's the other big perk of working with these companies, is that they often have money to spend. Now, the but of that is, but it might take a while to get to you if you agree to their existing payment terms, which, like you said, can be 30 days from now, 60 days from now, 90 days from now. And those sometimes can be very, very rigid at those enterprise level companies. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no getting around it. This is the way we do things. So either you're comfortable with that, or like what you did, you find a way around it. But most of the time, these companies, I mean, the opportunities they present are pretty lucrative. Like, they have the money to spend. So that's a nice perk as well. The con, though, of that is that because they are a bigger company and because they have big goals, they often have a lot bigger expectations. So they really want what they're buying from you to produce results, to do what you said that it's going to do. And so that's a lot more pressure on you as the freelancer to provide an end product that's really, really good and that does what they need you to do for them. Which, I mean, with writing and with design, it's kind of a question mark sometimes. Every audience is different. You don't know what's going to work. You have to test it and find out. So it can be a little bit more stressful than kind of a smaller end client or a small to mid-sized business who has a little bit lower expectations. And they still want really good quality work, but they're not being pressured by somebody above them to produce X result.
Mm-hmm. I thought of one more pro and one more con. I think so. Another pro is that once you have one big fish, like one big enterprise client or one big known client, it's easier to get other ones because a lot of times businesses are averse to risk. Mm-hmm. So they want to bet on a sure thing, especially if they're hiring a much smaller like business that's like one person. Right. So once you get one, it's way easier to get another. Is that first one is typically the biggest hurdle, and then it gets a bit easier. Another con that I thought of is that it will probably, even if you're like a lean, mean process machine, it's going to take you more time to do the work for an enterprise client because there's more red tape. Instead of like me hiring you and then you send me a draft of writing and I'm like, thumbs up emoji, approved. For an enterprise client, it could be your contact says, yes, now I have to run it by this project manager or worse, committee. If they say that, then just run screaming for the hills because committees is where creativity goes to die.
Yeah.
But it can definitely take longer. Like there could be layers of approval. And I always tried to, that was always a caveat with me with working with enterprise clients is how does sign off for my work work? Because I got burned by that a couple times where I would send a design. My contact would be like, yeah, that's awesome. And they'd be like, okay, this is great. And then it'd be like, but I have to talk to four other shareholders of this project. Mm. And it'd be like, wah, wah, wah. So I actually had in my contract that my contact had to have sign-up authority, because I didn't want that to happen. Because a few times it took months to get sign-off.
Well, that's really smart then. That's very proactive. People should write that down. That's a good thing to have in your process document.
It's a good tip, I guess.
It is. So let me ask, we've talked about how we got these kinds of clients. How, if somebody was getting their first one, say, like how should they convince to be hired essentially as a freelance person? What kind of things would they need to lay out on the table within the value proposition?
Yep, that's a great question because that's the biggest thing that freelancers should think about is how can I position myself as better than somebody else they could hire or an internal hire, like hiring full-time or an employee. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was always I produce the same level of work as an agency, but I have no overhead. So you get the same quality for less money. And same with employees. It's easier to hire me to do this project because I only have to do the work that you've hired me for. You don't have to put me through like HR stuff or you don't have to pay me anything else. I'm working as a contractor for you. So I'm just doing the work that you're hiring me for. All the other stuff, like it's expensive for corporations. And this is why the freelance economy is booming right now. It costs companies a lot of money to have full-time employees, much more than their salary. Their salary might not even be the biggest expenditure that they have for each employee. So hiring a freelancer can make sense. And a lot of times, and this is another reason why I got hired a bunch of times, is because their team had a project that they couldn't do themselves and they didn't have time to hire somebody. I didn't need to be brought up to speed. I just needed to be told what the project was, given the task, and then I would do it. So I ended up doing a lot of work for either Fortune 500 companies, like big clients, or doing work for agencies that were hired by big clients and those agencies didn't have enough people. So there's a lot of enterprise work that I've done where I was hired by an agency and they just gave me 100% of the work other than them managing the client, which I actually thought was easier. It's mm-hmm. like, I don't have to do, I'm just told what to do. I'm given my marching orders. Their payment terms with the agency is better than the payment terms with the big client. So it was easy. So that was always a value proposition, was that I can get to work quicker, I have less overhead, and I produce the same level of work. I'm not going to guarantee any outcomes because, like you said, it's really hard to do that. But I can say I have a good track record with outcomes. Here are some of them. Mm-hmm. And I produce quality work.
I think there's also the angle of, if you are somebody who has a very specific set of subject matter expertise, that's a huge advantage for you. So if you are a copywriter, for example, who specializes in sales pages for a specific type of product, and you have this great track record where you've produced all these results for similar types of clients, I mean, that's almost a no-brainer. Like, you are the dream person that could do this job. So I think just reminding the client of that and really spotlighting your expertise in those situations is a great way to, like I said, like, it would be silly for them not to hire you in that situation because you have exactly the specialized skill set that they're looking for.
Yeah, and that's also a benefit of niching down and finding like your specific audience that you serve with a specific skill set. Then you become known as the person that does this. It's really hard to hire those people full time because a company may only need that for a month of the year or a month every couple of years, whereas it could be like the expert at like CRO copywriting for SaaS is this person because I've seen their name because I'm in this industry. Maybe I'll just hire them to do a project for a month instead of looking to hire somebody full time because they might not even be able to find anybody full time.
Right. But this also opens the door to long-term relationships with those types of clients, because like you said, they might only have a one-time project, but they're probably going to have future projects that are similar. So that's an opportunity for freelancers to propose retainers with these types of clients and to say, I can kind of be your on-call person for this kind of agreement for, you know, the next 3 months. And that's, again, an opportunity for kind of some guaranteed income for at least like a short 3 to 6 to 9 month period. I could see that happening.
Yeah. Or even just work in the future.
Right.
Because the team, a lot of times the bigger clients I worked with, their team would get stretched too thin. They would bring me in to do the work. That happens a lot in corporations where the team just doesn't have, they have a discretionary fund where they have money in their budget to do whatever they need to do to get the work done. And so they can bring in freelancers. And that's so much, I feel like that's so much more common now. I feel like it wasn't as common many, many years ago, but I think that more and more companies are kind of seeing the benefits of that. So it even takes less convincing. It takes more convincing to convince the client that you specifically are the right person and less convincing that they should hire a freelancer in the first place. I don't know. I could be wrong there, but I feel
I've seen that too. I agree with that.
Cool. So what haven't we covered with working with freelance clients here?
You know, I think that that's the big stuff. Like you said, there is some red tape to be aware of, but I think in the long term, like you said, some of the benefits that you can get from doing this type of work will last far beyond when the project wraps. So, you know, the money is probably pretty good, but if you're getting pieces of authority building from these types of relationships, that's something to think about too, when you're kind of weighing the pros and cons of taking on a project like this.
Definitely. And I mean, with any project too, it's important to think whether it's worth it or not. Like, I have had some corporate clients completely lowball me because they're like, oh, you're a freelancer. You don't need to, you don't need to make much money on this. It's like, oh, I'm actually a legitimate business.
Thank you.
I'm just a smaller one. I'm still a legitimate business. So I think that sometimes it cannot be worth it if they're not going to respect the fact that you're doing legitimate work for them. But if that's not the case, then there can definitely be, like we said, quite a few pros, but it's not like the land of milk and honey every single time just because they're a client you've heard of. They could be a crappy client regardless of how big or small they are.
That's very true.
Cool. Hey friends, thanks for listening to the Creative Class Podcast.
If you enjoyed the show, please help us out by leaving a rating or review over on iTunes and be sure to subscribe too.
And if you like this podcast, you'll also like our online course, The Creative Class, and you can find out more at creativeclass.co.
See you next time.